Did you know that the port in New Orleans imports close to 300,000 tons, not 300,000 pounds, 300,000 tons of green coffee beans annually? I guess the question is why? Where does it all go? And what's happening? And here to help us understand this is Janine Mansour, Port NOLA Director of Trade Development, and Janet Colley from the Dupuy Group, Director of Customer Relations. And she's also the President of International Freight Forwarders and Customs Brokers Association of New Orleans. That is a mouthful for sure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel.
Good
We're happy to
morning.
be here.
So, Janine, I was reading some of the data on this issue of green coffee beans. I always knew that we had a big presence in it, but I didn't realize it was anywhere near 300,000 tons of material. That's a big number.
It certainly is. It's actually imported green coffee is our single largest containerized import commodity. And we always say that it's one of the most important from a local and regional economic impact standpoint because everything that's done to coffee in terms of the value-added processing, the cleaning, the sorting, the blending, the grading, and the roasting, is all done here in the local region. And so from an economic impact standpoint, in terms of job creation, in terms of investment in our region, perfect example is Folgers. 100% of Folgers coffee is moving through New Orleans, and they have over 1 billion in infrastructure right here in New Orleans. We also have Community Coffee headquartered in Baton Rouge, Riley Foods in New Orleans that produces French Market coffee, PJ's Coffee that has a big roasting and warehousing presence. And then Janet, who's on the call with me, Dupuy Group, they actually have the first green coffee silo that was ever built in America, and it's right here in New Orleans.
Janet Colley, tell us about that. And I guess there's a lot of infrastructure that's located here to service this industry that is truly unique. And I think we are one of the only areas that actually has some of this infrastructure, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a very exciting part of the industry that most people don't really know about, to be quite honest. Dupuy was founded in 1936 strictly as a green coffee warehouse, which is not an abnormal business to be in. However, fast forward to the late 80s, early 90s, and we realized that there was a need for some value-added services, such as the services that Janine just mentioned, blending, cleaning, sorting. These are actually a lot of the things that you would see at Origin, specifically that we've kind of brought here as value-added services to some of our local customers. So yes, we did open the first green coffee silo in the U.S., and the largest green coffee silo also resides here, being Silo Caf, owned by Folgers. And so we're very proud to be able to service not only the local region, but actually nationally. A lot of this coffee will be distributed, but that infrastructure does remain here and has a great impact on the regional economy.
Now, we receive green coffee beans from Brazil, Colombia, Vietnam, and many other parts of the world as well, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly. So it's go ahead.
My apologies, Janine. Yes, I was just going to say Brazil.
No.
Those countries are certainly core. There are plenty of other countries: Costa Rica, Honduras, Nicaragua, plenty of other Central and South American countries, as well as other parts of Asia and Africa.
Yeah, I know as a coffee drinker, I used to drink a Costa Rican blend that I absolutely love. I can't handle the coffee like I used to when I was younger and cut back on it. But and I remember my mother used to drink CDM. Was that it? Yeah. Was that the name
Yeah,
of the coffee?
absolutely.
Yeah. Is
Yep,
that still around?
definitely.
It is.
It is? And is that
It
processed here
absolutely
as
is,
well?
yes. That is actually no longer processed in New Orleans, no, but it's definitely still considered a local brand.
Yeah, it's And then when you think about all of the other things, the warehousing that goes with it, and a lot of this coffee used to be, I don't know if it's still the case here today, they would wait for the right price, right? We would store in warehouses all up and down the river and all throughout the metro area. And, you know, as I guess as a commodity, they were waiting for the right price to release it to the market. Is that still the case?
I'll go ahead and speak to that. That question is actually above my pay grade, but I'll do my best. Watching the market is something that our local traders and importers pay attention to minute by minute, day by day. And yes, it has a huge impact on how coffee is purchased from origin, how it is shipped in. Steamship lines get involved with freight rates, and so you've got a whole financial component that the market does dictate on a regular basis. So that's a very important and integral part of the coffee industry for sure.
And the only reason I bring it up is because, you know, as y'all describe it, it seems fairly simple, but it's a very complex trade, right? An industry requiring a lot of infrastructure, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things happening, which are all good for our economy in the end.
Absolutely. You know, 100%. Coffee is...
Yeah, go ahead, Jeannie.
It's everyone's favorite go-to source of caffeine, right? So the 300,000 tons that you mentioned in the intro, Newell, just to break that down to a more relatable number, so it's about 15,000 containers that's moving every year right here through New Orleans. And then SiloCaf, which Janet mentioned, which is for Folgers Coffee, they also do Dunkin' Donuts processing in that facility as well. So it's pretty cute because they say Folgers is owned by J.M. Smucker's, and so the J.M. Smucker's CEO often says, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup, but America also runs on Dunkin', to play to both brands that they're processing through that facility. But, you know, it's a really intricate process, and it uses the latest technology. So the containers, they use a tilt chassis system where they're actually dumping the green coffee beans through a grated floor. And then the coffee beans in that SiloCaf facility, which is very visible, and you know, it's right uptown. If you're on Chapultepec in Nashville, you can see the SiloCaf with the J.M. Smucker's logo from the city side. And so the coffee then goes through the layers, or the floors, I should say, of processing, where they're doing the cleaning, they're sorting the beans, and they actually use lasers to determine weight, and then an air system to sort the beans, and then they're doing the blending. And something Janet can certainly speak more to, because she's more of the coffee expert, is they actually do the cupping in a laboratory where they have the certified coffee cuppers assigning the grades to the coffee, and that's how you get the various quality grades, and then it determines the blends that are made.
Jenna, tell us about that, because I actually knew about cuppers because I know folks that actually stored coffee and went through a tour and learned about that. That's been a trade that's been around for a long, long time, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's, again, that's an extremely, well, it's probably one of the more important parts of the industry, to be honest. Those are the people who are keeping your coffee consistent. When you find a coffee, for instance, you were talking about the Costa Rican blend that you liked. When you find that blend that you really like the taste of, you want to make sure it tastes the same every time. And those are the experts who are sitting down making sure that those beans, when they're roasted, taste that consistent quality, makes it across to the consumer.
And then, as we talked about earlier, there is this coffee exchange on top of all of this, where that, you know, they're buying and selling this commodity.
Absolutely, yes. Also, another very important part of our industry, completely, well, not completely different, but certainly different from the consumer side, putting coffee up on the exchange is an intricate process, and thankfully the Port of New Orleans is one of the few ports to actually be certified by the ICE exchange located in New York, and we are very proud to say that volume is starting to increase. We're starting to see a little bit more exchange coffee come in through the Port of New Orleans.
So obviously there are a lot of different trends that have been established in the coffee industry as generations. You know, I know my mother's generation kind of like chicory, in the blend, right? Which was interesting. You don't see that as much anymore. It's a pure coffee, but they have all of these artisanal coffees now. Where do we see the industry going?
I'll speak to that a little bit. It is a major trend in the coffee industry. I actually attend a convention every year facilitated by an association called the Specialty Coffee Association, and they focus on this is a 15,000 person trade show that focuses on this type of increase of specialty coffee in the industry, which, yes, I think has a lot to do with demographics. Younger people are wanting different types of drinks. They're wanting not just that black cup of coffee in the morning. They're going to want the almond milk and the different, you know, the lattes and the cappuccinos. And also, they're also focusing a lot more, to be quite honest, on where their coffee is coming from. They're very interested in the origin. So they want to know if they're drinking 100% Colombian or if they're getting some kind of a blend and what that blend is. So the specialty market is really blowing up, not just in New Orleans, but nationally, internationally, actually.
And then also, obviously, the modality of the delivery of it with the K-cups and all of these other machines that are out there. When we talk about value added, is that something that we're doing here in New Orleans in the packaging of that into K-cups and alike?
Certainly, yeah. I think, you know, locally, perhaps regionally, definitely. We've got, for instance, we've got a wonderful company in Baton Rouge called Podpack, which is a co-packer that has actually started here in New Orleans, crazily enough, started on the second floor of the building I'm sitting in right now. And they have catapulted themselves to success in a variety of different packaging, like you said, modalities. So K-cups, frac packs, different types of, you know, even, you know, food service types of packaging, that kind of thing. So yeah, those different, and like we can talk about the bottled beverages and the cold brews and the cans and all these different things that you didn't see 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah. Interestingly, one of the highlights that y'all provided for me, coffee retail sales spiked 29% during COVID. Has that been able to maintain itself?
You know, it's funny, Newell, because we were tracking our commodities that were having fluctuations during COVID, and it probably comes as no surprise that we saw a big increase in coffee as well as alcoholic beverages and spirits. And so this is explained by, you know, people spending a lot of time at home, not going out, spending their money out at restaurants and bars, not going to Starbucks and retail shops, but making more coffee in the home. You tend to drink more coffee if you're brewing a pot at home. And so that consumption did spike to like 29% higher during the COVID period compared to pre-pandemic. We have seen that come down and normalize, like a lot of the trends that we saw during COVID that were supply chain related. So that has come down. But like Janet said, we're seeing, you know, a lot of growth in the specialty sector. And then certainly what we were just talking about on the K-cup side has had very strong growth. Looking at some of the statistics, about half of American households own a Keurig machine or similar to that, where it's the single brewing. So we're seeing a lot of growth there.
Absolutely. The LIT project, that would be important to this to the coffee industry as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, LIT, we're so excited about this transformational project that will allow Louisiana to serve, you know, vessels of all sizes. And as vessels are continuing to get larger and larger and are not able to fit under the Crescent City connection, that means that if we don't have LIT as an option for larger vessels, which our coffee importers rely on to get their green coffee in from all parts of the world, then the coffee industry is certainly hurt by that. So it's a big project, you know, just from a competitiveness standpoint in our region. So definitely all of our big coffee import stakeholders are very, very excited to see this project move forward.
I love finding out about the little nuances, and this is not little by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, you know, the nuances of the port and the coffee industry and the important role that we play. What percentage of the coffee business do you think actually flows through our port?
So we're consistently, of all the coffee that's brought into the U.S., we're consistently in the top three. In many years, we're just right behind New York, but we're number two. So you think about all the coffee that's coming into the United States, right? To be number two consistently, we're such a huge player in the coffee market, and I think a lot of people probably don't realize that. In fact, I had a friend ask me once before, hey, does the port have a jam factory on property? Because I'm looking at this large facility from Tapatulas, and I see the J.M. Smucker's logo. And so obviously, you know, J.M. Smucker's owns Folgers, so I explained to them just the magnitude of the coffee operation. You know, 300,000 tons, we tried to make that figure more relatable to the community, so we took some, you know, numbers that we researched, and we calculated that that's enough beans to make 20 billion cups of coffee. Just to make it a little bit more digestible of a number. So it is a hugely important commodity to the region that I think it is hard for, you know, the average person to get their head around.
Your friend was probably looking for some free jars of strawberry preserves for sure. That's my favorite.
Possibly. It probably would smell a little bit better than the green coffee. Doesn't smell nearly as good as a nice roasted cup of coffee.
Absolutely. Jenna Colley, Janine Mansour, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate the information y'all provided. Very interesting. I love talking about all of the things that go on through the Port of New Orleans, which is so integral to our economy. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line. And just remember, you can have this show delivered directly to your phone absolutely free. You can listen to this entire show, Tommy's show, Scoot's show, Sports Talk. Just download the app free, and you can listen to it in any way you really want to, right? Or just tell your smart speaker, play WWL. We'll be right back with the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser. Stay with us.